This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Spoiler alert! What Did You Watch This Week is a candid discussion about recent movies and TV shows, and it may contain spoilers if you haven't watched them yet. Listen at your own risk.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 59.
Almost a perverted number. Not quite there.
No, we're not quite there. We're 10 away.
That's
10 right. Away from inappropriateness.
That's right.
What would you watch this week? My name is Mike.
My name, as always, is John.
Is it always John? Do you ever go by anything else?
I don't. Yeah. Sometimes people call me Jonathan, but it's not Jonathan.
It's not Jonathan. It's just straight up John. Anyone ever call you the fourth?
No.
I think I'm going to start doing that.
Okay.
That's my new thing for you. I'm going to refer to you as the fourth.
Excellent. I was watching a show or something today, and somebody was talking about that. They said, did you notice how nobody under the age of 35 is named John? And that kind of hit me in the gut. I was like, wow.
I heard that same thing today.
Yeah.
What was it I was watching?
Was it Class?
No. It was Class,
was
maybe.
It? Okay.
Yeah.
Because I watched Class.
Yeah, they were talking about old names.
Yes, it was.
Class. It was Class. It was the new head teacher.
Yeah, and she was talking to Miss Quill. I don't know any Andreas. It's an old name.
Yeah.
God,
what a terrible episode.
Hit me in the gut. Like, nobody's named John anymore.
Well, there's a ton of Michaels out there, and there probably always will be.
Yeah.
I thought Class was horrible.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't like it at all.
Oh,
like, I
liked it a lot. That's weird.
Nah, there's that whole scene where the girl there, the lead girl, Amy or whatever her name is.
Yeah, April.
April, you know, she has sex with the Indian boy.
Ram.
And while they're doing it, over on the Shadow King and his, I don't know,
that
dominion.
Was a bit awkward. Yeah.
Awkward. It was friggin' dumb. He wants to get it on with her because his, you know, they're sharing a heart and he's feeling all emotional. And then there's this whole scene where, like, he, like, fails to finish or stops or finishes early. And so she kind of insults him at first. And then she's like, I'm sorry, you're the Shadow King. You can do what you want. And then he asked her to cuddle. And it's all done in the voice. And I'm just like, this is fucking garbage.
Yes.
That part was
complete garbage. I will 100% agree with you there. Like, I liked the aspects where she would fly into a rage and draw the scimitars out of thin air, you know, and you could feel that he was, you know, influencing her when she was talking about soldiers and how when you sign up for the army, you sign up to die. And that part I liked, but yeah, the part where it was flipped and suddenly he's like, oh, let's cuddle. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, I hated it. I thought it was completely stupid. And between this week's episode of that happening and last week me not being able to I just couldn't get into last week's episode, The Night Visitors.
Yeah.
You're
just about done with it?
Yeah, honestly, I am. I find it to be rather disappointing.
See,
considering how good Doctor Who is.
Right. And you know, I got to say, you know, these last two episodes I did get into. You know, I really got into Night Visiting because it felt like a suspenseful Alfred Hitchcock kind of thing to an extent. I could have definitely done without the little subplot of the two boys exploring their sexuality because it didn't seem to fit with anything else. You know,
and maybe that's what it is. Maybe this has elements of greatness, but there's too much ridiculousness going on.
Yeah, it's like each episode they throw at least one thing in there that makes you go, oh, come on. You know, and it was the sexuality last time when you have all these other characters who are exploring their dead loved ones.
Yeah.
And trying to come to grips with it one way or another. And then in this one, you've got some really great stuff of April trying to deal with the fact that her dad's back in town. We've got this whole mystery of the flower petals that are dissolving flesh and reproducing and, you know, eating squirrels and stuff. And yet it's flanked by, or right in the middle of it, they drop this stupid section of, You know, oh, well, and you're right. Like, if they had just, if the Shadow King and his concubine there or whatever, you know, his next person who was trying to help him had just been like primal and savage about it, it would have been fine. But the fact that they tried to make it humanistic, you know, and she's like, oh, well, you can be done. That's fine. It's your prerogative as the king. And he's like, can't we cuddle? That was ridiculous. That ruined what could have been a really great episode.
I guess, you know, really thinking about it, if you took that whole section out of the episode, the whole thing of them having sex, both the people and the shadow people, and just everything else that was in the episode, I could get behind that. But that whole thing, it just completely removed me from everything that was going on to the point where I went from kind of paying attention to it to just like, I'm going to do something else and this is going to be on the background.
Yep.
I shut it off is what I end up doing.
Oh, wow.
Like I watched a little bit more and then I looked at the time and I was like, I really need to watch Doctor Who before, you know, I'll finish up if I have time. So I actually shut it off so I could watch Doctor Who to make sure I got Doctor Who in. And then I went back and finished it after. And I wasn't a fan.
No. Because of that scene. And you're right. You know, that scene was terrible. It was garbage and it didn't belong in there because they ruined it. You know, I can deal with a little sex. That's fine. I can deal with a lot of sex. I'm not a prude. But you know, they are high school kids. So, you know, you expect that kind of stuff. And then they even had the typical, you know, mom is grilling them afterwards. She's like, did you use protection? I'm talking to my daughter. You're like, okay, you're reminded that these are high school kids, but it was the whole Shadowkin stuff that just, it bothered me.
Yeah.
It was just, it was terrible. It takes you right out of it. You're right. But I liked the other aspects of it. Like I said, there's the mystery of the flowers and what's going on there. This new headmistress seems to be able to be in multiple places at once. And she seems to know everything that's going on. She says that the governors like to run a tight ship. We still don't know who the governors are. She's now talking to Miss Quill about getting the parasite out of her head so that she wouldn't have to, you know, be subservient to Charlie. That could be interesting. That could be a good dynamic. Seeing April, like, slash a hole in reality and jump into the shadow world afterwards. That was great.
But yeah, and that was cool. And then the Ram jumped through after her.
Yep. I had forgotten up until that point that it was part one of two.
Yeah, how her dad, how would, like, you know, when she was confronting your dad, how he kind of took over because she became full of rage.
Yep.
And I can understand, like, okay, when she becomes angry and he's able to take over, you know, what's the opposite of that? How can he take over her? Oh, I know. Let's make her, you know, horny, basically.
Right.
But still, it's just the execution, the way it was done, it was just, took me out. But yeah, I mean, the blossoms things that are eating the squirrels and the birds and feeding on blood and multiplying and all that. Yeah, that's very Doctor Who-ish, you know?
Yes. So. Yeah, I almost felt like maybe that new headmistress was, like, put there by the doctor or something.
Right.
But we'll have to see.
We will have to see. And while we're talking about the great Doctor, let's talk about Doctor Who.
I only had one big problem with this episode.
What was it?
It really could have benefited from being a two-part episode. Because I would have liked to have seen a more stretched out version of this story. Like, basically, they started off looking at different apartments and different buildings and, you know, they were failing. Everything kind of sucked because it was all tiny and, you know, six people trying to live in the same house. I still don't know why, but.
Yeah. Know. How that group got together and decided, all right, let's the six of us find a place because that'll be cheaper.
And we're all very diverse and we're covering the diversity rainbow, but.
Yes, they were.
But then that guy appears out of nowhere and he's like, I will take you to this place and you can sign this contract. Make sure you sign the contract. It would have been nice to see them, like, living there for more than 5 minutes before they started getting eaten. You know,
they didn't seem all too concerned the first time he popped back up out of nowhere.
I know. He just, like, appears out of nowhere. And one person says, how'd you get in here? And then everybody's just like, oh, well, he's the caretaker. You know,
he's the landlord. Yeah.
But I would have liked to have seen, like, you know, some montages even of them, you know, living their day-to-day life and then the doctor popping in here and there to like investigate or see what was going on and check on them. But it was like the moment they moved in, they started getting eaten. And, yep. And it was like the very night that Bill brought her stuff over that suddenly like everybody sucked up into the house somehow. And then it was also resolved in the same night. It just felt like that could have been a gradual progression that would have made the story even better, in my opinion.
Yep.
Otherwise, I liked it. I thought it was a great episode.
I thought it was a really good episode. You know, I liked how like the doctor, like Bill was just like, she made that one point of saying like, this is the bit of my life that you're not in.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how it's always been with the doctor and his companions. You know, he's in their lives, but there is a section of their lives he's not in for the most part.
Right.
You know, they still have their personal life because they're able to pull it off because they go on these big wild adventures and they go right back to, you know, like they miss no time.
And that's been especially like drilled home in the Moffat years.
Oh, yes.
You know, there was a little bit of it when we had like Martha Jones, you know, and she'd have to catch up with her family and stuff and be like, well, you know, they're worried about me. Not so much with Rose. Or with, yeah, I mean a little bit with Rose because, you know, Mickey was upset that she was going away and her mom was worried about her. But, you know, when we got to Moffat, it was big, especially with Amy and Rory. Like, they had tons of little montages where they'd show them, like, living their lives and planning parties and going to people's houses. And
yes, yes, and then jumping off.
Yep. And then Clara even did that for a while, you know, where we'd see her like on a date with Danny and then she'd duck into a closet and appear in the TARDIS and then go on an adventure and then jump out of the TARDIS, change clothes really quickly and meet up with Danny again.
Yeah. So that means, yeah.
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 So yeah. Bill definitely put her foot down, but he wasn't having any of it because he could sense the danger.
Oh, yeah, he wasn't leaving at all.
No.
I didn't see the twist of that was her son.
Yeah, but it was cool that Bill was the one that came up with it, and he was even like, oh, no dust settling on you.
I liked how – what was it? Why would he bring her bugs?
Right.
That doesn't make any sense because everybody loves bugs. They're great. No, they're not. Like they have this whole discussion about bugs in the middle of the – kind of like the whole the crisis thing going on.
Yep.
So –
I like that they didn't feel the need to like specifically explain everything about the bugs or where they came from. You know, he just kept calling them space lice.
They're space lice, exactly. They're space lice,
and they eat people. You know, that was it. He didn't want to like find out what planet they were from or try to overly explain anything. It was just like that's what they were, and let's stop it.
Yep, that's what they were. That's what they did. Yeah, let's move on. So the ending, the doctor opens the vault.
Yeah.
Steps inside.
Yeah.
Like, wasn't the first episode they were trying to figure out how to open it?
That's what I thought.
Me too. And then now in this episode, not only does he open it, but like, oh, you put a piano in there? Oh, he brought dinner? Who's he going to have dinner with? You think it's the master?
I think it is. I think it's the master. And apparently we're not going to have to wait long. They said that within like a couple of episodes, we're going to know who's in there because they don't want it to be like the big season-long question, which I thought it was going to be. So.
Well, I thought it was going to be as well, but then with him, the fact that they've already dropped the hat that we know he's regenerating at the end of the season.
Yeah.
It's like they couldn't probably drag that out if that was the person that's going to cause it to happen because they would need to establish, you know, more of a story.
Right.
And then he did kind of tip his hat about regeneration in this episode to Bill.
Yes.
So it's like they're teasing it.
Yep.
It was a tease. So I'm anxious. I don't know. It's a great season so far.
It really is. I am having so much fun with this season.
Yeah, it's a fun show. It's definitely a fun show. And I think Nardo mentioned this, you know, like in this week. See, you can have fun adventures and stay on this planet. It's just as screwed up as every place else.
That's right.
But yeah, I look forward to. I mean, we've already four episodes in already.
Yeah.
Crazy. Crazy. Well, did you – you're not watching Taken, are you?
No, I'm not.
I didn't think so. It was the – we're already at the season finale.
That's not surprising though. I mean –
10 episodes.
Yeah, a lot of these premiere shows got shorter seasons.
Yep. We're not sure if it's going to hasn't said if it's going to be renewed or not.
Yep.
Basically, in this episode, you know, the season started with Mills on a train with his sister, and this guy, Majea, I can't pronounce his name, the bad guy, kills her. And then he hunts him down, and then he joins his team, and then they capture the guy, and then he's held in a Black Ops, like, you know, prison site, and then he questions him, and then he wants to kill him. And then in the last week's episode, you know, basically it was set up that they're going to – that this guy was going to get traded back or traded to a Mexican government custody, and Brian didn't want it to happen. But then the guy escapes, and they ends up – you know, he takes Brian's girlfriend and takes her to Mexico.
So she was taken.
She was taken, yes. And so Brian's – and he, remember I told you he cut his little taken speech,
yep.
A little mini version of it. So now in this episode, Brian's going to Mexico to track her down. So he's chasing her down, and he is determined. His team catches up with him, like, Brian, you can't go to Mexico. And he's like, you need to help me. And they're like, all right, we'll do it. A little bit more than that, but basically that's the gist of it. So they go to Mexico, and essentially, you know, like, when they're there – This bad guy, he's now back with his people, and he's having this big party, and his right-hand man, who's been running things while he was in prison and gone, he kills him, and then Brian's team rushes the place, and then the background is the Mexican army is approaching. They're coming in to raid themselves. So long and the short of it, Brian has a standoff with the guy in the kitchen. He's got a knife to his girlfriend's throat. Brian's got his gun on him, and the guy slits her throat, just half of it though, and runs off. And one of Brian's teammates comes in along with Brian, and he's like, you don't let her die. And he chases the guy down. And now we have the big standoff outside, and there's the Mexican government, the military, and then there's the bad guy, and then there's Brian. And Brian's got a gun on the bad guy, and the whole Mexican government's all got guns on them.
So this is literally a Mexican standoff?
It's literally a Mexican standoff, yeah. Yeah, it is. Dude, I had to pause it because I was laughing so hard.
That's when
I
realized, awesome.
Oh my god, it's a literal Mexican standoff. So Brian's team leader is basically with the Mexican government. She's like, Brian, you need to put your gun down now. Like, they're going to shoot you. I cannot stop this from happening. You need to put your gun down. And he does. He lowers his gun. And then the bad guy, of course, says something that antagonizes him and eggs him on. So Brian shoots him in the head. And basically he gets the closure of this is the guy that killed his sister, you know, that caused everything that happened at the beginning. And now in the last episode, he's killed him. Oh, and then Brian gets shot twice, but in his vest. And then they take him into custody. And then the last scene we see is Brian is in a Mexican prison cell, basically.
Is he there with Michael Scofield?
No, he's there by himself as far as we know.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think there's a crossover between the two. It's a network thing.
Yeah.
But anyhow, but basically Brian's team is like, where is he? How can we get him back? And they're like, we don't even know if he's alive. And then it cuts to, you know, the long camera pan, and you see Brian laying in a prison cell.
Gotcha.
So, and that's how the season ended. So who knows if that's going to be the end of the series, if they're going to renew it for another season or not. If they do, I'll keep watching it. Because, again, like I did really enjoy the – I really did enjoy the show.
Nice.
Yeah. You know, truth be told, I can't imagine if I would ever rewatch it type of thing. Like, I didn't enjoy it that much that okay. I want to watch the whole thing again. But I enjoyed it enough on a week-to-week basis that, like, you know, hey, if they have another season, I'll definitely tune in. Would you watch? You still there, John? I lose you?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, all right.
Sorry, I was messing around with the mute button. I must have hit it wrong.
There we go.
So keeping in line with what I was just joking about with Michael Scofield, Prison Break gave us some answers this week, which was kind of nice. You know, last week they got out of the prison, and Michael and Link were reconnected. There's been a theme going through this one. There's some mysterious CIA guy or NSA or something. His code name is Poseidon, and everybody fears Poseidon. You know, nobody knows who he is. He's somebody who's so deep in the organization that nobody knows what he looks like or who he is. And so last episode, it was hinted at, or it, you know, we were led to believe that the identity of Poseidon is actually Sarah's new husband, played by Mark Feuerstein. He was the main doctor on Royal Pains. You know, that guy.
Yes. Okay. Yep.
So, you know, basically, Teabag followed him and found him meeting up with the two assassins who have been taking people out and trying to kill anyone who knows about Michael. So that's where we got last episode. And, of course, this episode he has the plausible deniability. He's like, oh, no, I talked to a friend of mine who works, you know, on tech, and he checked that your phone had been bugged, and, you know, he traced it back. And so I called the number and arranged a meeting with these people because I wanted to tell them to leave you alone. And, you know, he's got the excuse, the classic, like, oh, no, I'm just looking out for you. Let me sow some seeds of distrust in your mind. So we still don't know if he's Poseidon or not. Shows like this like to do that, you know, where they throw you something where you're like, aha, it's that person. And then they're like, but it really isn't. Ha ha ha. We're smarter than you because we know everything and you know nothing.
Nothing wrong with a little misdirection.
No, there isn't. I will say though, like when we switch gears and we go over to Michael and Lincoln and those guys, it's a lot more tense than it has been in the past. Like, it was always tense in the first season of Prison Break because, you know, you're trapped in there. You don't know who's your friend, who's your enemy, etc. Then when they got out, you know, there were some tense moments when they were on the run or they were in a different prison, but you didn't really care. This time, it's really, really tense, and I think part of that is because they're fighting or they're trying to hide from ISIS. And that's something that's very current and very, like, recognizable. You know, you hear ISIS is on the move and they're hunting people down, and you can relate to that. Maybe not because you've been hunted down by them, but it's something that, you know, you're like, oh, it'd be like a show set in the 80s if they were like, the Russians are coming for you. You'd be like, whoa, Jesus, you know, that was very relatable back then. So they're over here, they're over in the Middle East, they're trying to get away, ISIS is hunting them down and pinning them in buildings and stuff. So all that was, you know, typical boiler room stuff, but we finally got the answers that the reason that everyone thought Michael was dead was because he was approached by Poseidon 7 years ago and told, you know, the deal that Kellerman cut for you guys to keep you out of prison and exonerate you. He doesn't have the authority to do that. You're all going back to prison unless you do work for me. You know, we're going to fake your death and you're going to basically, I'm going to send you to different places around the world, people that I want broken out of prisons, and you're going to break them out of prison since you're so good at that. So he's essentially spent the past 7 years being a professional prison breaker for this guy Poseidon and not allowed to talk to anybody or tell anybody so that they could all be free and not go to jail, not go back to jail for everything that they had done. So it was kind of nice that the writers took that time to basically tie a ribbon on it, you know, say, yeah, we know that this is how we ended the series, but we're going to give you a reasonable expectation of, you know, this is why it ended that way. And this is
what's pretty cool.
Yeah. So I really appreciate that.
Cool. Yeah. I like that.
Otherwise it was just, it was a typical episode where it starts off solving the issue from last episode. We have some twists and turns, and then in the end, there's another big, you know, the plane is taking off that their friends are on, and these guys are at the airport, but they're on the other side of the fence, and they can't get to the plane in time because, you know, ISIS is chasing the plane down with like three or four vehicles, and they're firing guns at it, and so how are they going to get away without the plane? It's like 30 miles to the nearest border, but, you know, ISIS is everywhere on all the roads, all the checkpoints, et cetera. So now that's so, what now they'll what, do next what, episode.
I'll say, what episode number is this?
That was episode 4 or 5.
And how many more do we have left?
It's only 10 episodes this time, I believe.
Okay. All right. So, actually, I thought it was like 9 or some weird number like that.
It could be. I'll look it up. Hold on.
So I don't think it was quite 10.
Yeah, I remember that it was a short season. And they're not even calling it, like, if you look up Prison Break on IMDb, you've got Prison Break from 2005, and then there's a separate listing for Prison Break Resurrection in 2017.
Huh, okay.
And they're even calling it a TV miniseries. So, let's see. Season 1, there are 9 episodes, and yeah, tomorrow will be episode 6. So that was episode 5.
Okay.
Yeah, I've been enjoying it. You know, it's had some tense moments and it's had some fun moments, and I definitely do not regret starting watching it.
Am I muted? No. They do the same thing with the X-Files. Like, it's season 10, but like, if you go on Hulu or Netflix, it's not mixed in with the regular X-Files at all. In fact, it's not even on there.
Right.
It's its own kind of thing. So.
Oh, before I forget, speaking of Hulu, I had a shock the other day. You might have seen this. I booted up Hulu to go watch a show, and under the suggestions for John, it had, like, the third one in was John Doe.
Really? Yeah. John Doe is on Hulu?
Yeah.
Excuse me while I grab, while I queue up my Hulu real right? quick and add it to the,
oh,
watch
it went
list.
On my watch list immediately. I was like, because we've talked about that a couple of times on the show, how we can't find it anywhere.
Yes,
and
we
suddenly,
have.
Boom, there it
I really
is.
Want to watch that show. Nice. Yeah. Yeah, but like, for instance, I'm glad I own the new season of The X-Files on Blu-ray. Yep. My wife got it for me for my birthday last year because it's not streaming anywhere, right. Not even on Fox's
Isn't
app.
Isn't that weird?
Yes, it is weird. Holy shit, John Doe.
For those listening,
I'm gonna have
that
to,
was a great
I'm going to text Rude about that. There it is! Awesome. All 21 episodes for that first season.
John Doe came out at the same time as Firefly. They were both on Friday nights on Fox, and they both got canceled right about the same time. And it was a crushing blow for both. You know, John Doe, I think the reason that we don't hear that much about it is because it happened at the same time as Firefly, and we all saw what happened with Firefly, how it, you know, it became a fan favorite, yeah. And it took off afterwards, and it became so popular, and then Serenity came out, and, you know, it's got such a huge fan base, but John Doe lived and died at the same time, and that was a really good show. That was a side of Dominic Purcell you're really not used to seeing, because he was actually an intelligent person. He had information in his head on everything, like he was a walking Wikipedia. Definitely check that out if you guys get a chance. If you have Hulu.
Yeah, sincerely, you need to watch that. That is such a great
and
show.
And yes, it ended prematurely, and we never got the answers that we wanted, and they did an interview with the creators, you know, a year later or so in a magazine, and asked them what some of the answers were. Don't check it out, because they were stupid answers. Those people really had a bad plan in mind. But, yeah, watch the show and enjoy the show. You will enjoy the show. It is so much fun. Great crime drama, mystery to unfold type of thing. Yeah. Definitely a big thumbs up from me.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. Absolutely. If we ever do the cult TV shows or favorite TV shows we like that were canceled early, that was on my list.
Absolutely.
You know, that was definitely on my list.
I can't believe it's back.
I know, I'm pretty excited it's on Hulu.
Yeah.
So, nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
So what else you got?
That's great news. That's great news. Oh, geez, where do we want to go with this? I guess let's just – you want to start with Gotham?
Hold on. I just want to ask you real quick, because we had talked about this a couple weeks ago, and we haven't gotten back to it yet. Are you still watching Making History?
Oh, yes, I am. Yeah, I'm all caught up.
I
even watched – this is Monday. We're recording the 8th. I watched last night's episode.
Okay. I haven't watched that one yet. But the one before that where they bring Sam Adams and John Hancock into the future, I did not like that episode.
How come?
I thought that it was a bit ridiculous. Like the
Oh, it was massively stupid.
The scene where they went absolutely nuts trying to find the miniature musicians, and so they decided that the best thing to do was to destroy the apartment. Like they also wanted to feed the musicians by putting food into the speakers, you know, because they weren't playing, so we need to feed them. Maybe they're hungry. And
see, I get what you're saying. It's almost like you would think they'd be smart enough to think, all right, there really can't be people living in there. Right. But the fact that they did, I thought was funny. And I laughed quite a bit about that.
It was funny to an extent, but the fact that they like ran around the apartment, literally destroying everything. They were like, they've got to be trapped right. in here somewhere. So they're like taking out glasses from the cupboard and throwing them on the ground. I was just like, this is over the top. Like, if they had destroyed the stereo system, that's one thing. I would have been like, okay, that's pretty funny. But it, I don't know. The miniature musicians joke is kind of overplayed for me, at least. You know, it seems to be one of the stereotypical tropes for somebody who's out of time. You know, there's always like a Walkman or an MP3 player or something, and they're like,
right.
Where do you hide the musicians? So,
yeah. So it just, that's a classic
yeah,
bit.
Yeah. Otherwise, though, not a bad episode. I still enjoy the show.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy the show. I enjoy the characters.
Was last night's episode good?
Yes, it was good. Last night's episode was good. It's a continuation of basically the previous week where I can't think of his name, the black guy.
Oh yeah, I can't think of. I can think of the historical yeah. people, but I can't think of either one of the two main characters.
I know. Anyways, he's fed up.
I can imagine. He just lost tenure. And he looks like yeah, a disgrace exactly. and a sex addict.
Yeah, he's fed up. And he wants them to go back. And so this week is the kind of the continuation of that. You know, it opens up with them. Basically, they're going to be saying goodbye. But then there's a catalyst that makes them want to stay there. And it's the episode's called The Duel because they challenge each other to a duel. And because of this catalyst, and it just kind of goes on from there. And the fact that they want to shoot each other, the black character is like, yes, this is great. This is great. So, I mean, it's still done really well. And then, oh, my God. All right, I'm just going to ruin this for you. I don't. There's a reporter. Like, he tries to bring in a local reporter to, like, give the ice cream shop some coverage of the newspaper. Okay. And both the girl and the other guy are like, that's a really bad idea. I mean, why would you want to draw attention to the fact that she's from the colonial times? Like, you don't want to bring a reporter in this. They'll find this right. out, you know? And he's like, oh, no, it'll be fine. So, of course, she comes in and she sits down. The first thing the reporter says, and by the way, I recognize her. I just can't remember where I recognize her okay. from. And I didn't bother looking her up. Anyways, the first thing she says is like, so how'd you guys meet? And they both were like, oh, like they had no story, no nothing. And they were like, grade school. And what was the name of the grade school? You don't know the name of your grade school? Who knows the name of their old grade school? She's like, pretty much everybody who's ever been to a grade school knows the name of their grade school. And he's like, she just goes like, Monroe. So anyway, so she is like, there's something not adding up. And she ends up coming back later to talk to them again. And again, you know, she has like footage of when Franklin and Adams bought the ice cream shop. Yep. And she has questions as to why they signed their names as, you know, John Adams and Benjamin Franklin. Not Benjamin Franklin. Yeah. John Hancock and John Adams, right?
Yeah. John okay. Hancock and Sam Adams.
Sam Adams, thank you. Not John Adams. Sam Adams, thank you. Anyways, and so they're basically answered that with ho, 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 type of thing. And so at the end of the episode, you see her standing there. And you know how people will like when reporters are investigating something, they'll have different pictures of their subjects. And there's a string that goes to connect yes. one, you know, here to here, here to here. So they kind of show one of those, but they show like one picture at a time. And then when they do the pan out, they're one on top of the other, and the string just runs straight down. And she's standing there looking at it, like pondering it. Like it was just really stupid. And the wall she had it on, she wouldn't have any room besides to put them the way they were. Like it was just like
nice.
And it was just kind of this like quick little flash, like at the end, like, oh, hey, you know, by the way, this is what's going on. You know. For next week or something. I don't know. I thought it was pretty damn funny.
It looks like, according to IMDb, next week's episode is the last one.
Okay. All right. Wow. Already.
And I really don't think that it's going to be renewed, which is too bad, because it is an enjoyable show.
It is. It's funny and it's stupid and it's just, it is what it is, but it's enjoyable. You're like you said.
Yep. So yeah, as you were saying, Gotham.
Yeah. So what'd you think of this week's episode of Gotham, John?
Well, it did not suck as much as I expected it to.
Because Ivy was coming back, you mean?
Well, no, because as I mentioned last week, Gotham has this habit of coming off hiatus really strong and then plummeting right afterwards. It's like they always seem to have really good episodes when they first come back, and then all of a sudden they go to shit. And it also has to do with some of the characters. Like every episode where Jerome was, you know, featured fairly prominently, turned out to be a good episode. Mm-hmm. He was a really well-developed yes. character. He really did good.
Agreed.
Nygma, once they started giving Nygma his twisted side and talking to himself, etc., he has made every episode that he's been in much better. This episode had none of that.
No, had the Penguin calling an old henchman who he trusts and shouldn't, and then... You know, Ivy's magic perfume revealing all.
Yeah, Penguin, like, for a guy who was shot and betrayed and dumped in the river, and then this girl, beautiful girl, rescues him and nurses him back to health, mm-hmm. he's a remarkable dick about the whole thing.
Oh, massive. He calls her a freak. He's like, nothing personal, but you're a little bit of a freak. And then when he gets called a freak later, he loses his mind. Right.
And, you know, she tries to give him food and he throws it down and breaks the bowl. You know, he's just, yeah. he's a complete dick to her all the time and
massive. And you know what that means? That means she is probably super attracted to him.
Right,
now.
Right. Unfortunately. Well, she did stick around and, you know, helped him out.
Yeah. She did.
That part did bother me, you know, that he just, yeah. he had no reason to be mean to her. She's been nothing but nice to him and not even like sickeningly sweet nice. So he couldn't say you're just too overly nice. She was just helping and she's obviously quite self-absorbed, but she still saw that this was the right thing to do. So she helped him and he still was like, you know, you're an ass, you know, do this for me right now and then get away from me. And yeah. And then they buried all the henchmen in the potting soil. That was kind of weird, wasn't it?
Yeah, it seems like a bad idea.
And we didn't get any Riddler. Basically, we got him off screen with, you know, Jim and Bullock talking about, oh, how are we going to find him?
And then, what was it? The mains, well, then, and Bruce had his training going on. But we didn't see any, I don't remember seeing Toos at all in this episode.
No.
It was just the clones in place. Now let's cut to Bruce, like, being trained by that guy who, I don't know. It seems like a really bad ripoff of Scott Glenn from Sucker Punch.
Yeah.
Doesn't it?
Yes, I agree with you.
Seems like a very piss poor version of Scott Glenn from Sucker yep. Punch. And then, Barbara. Barbara Ruzal.
Yes.
Apparently. And they, and of course, you know, so Jim has to call her for a favor to go check out the docks for something that was delivered. You know, like, it's just what.
Because now suddenly they're all about this Court of Owls.
Yeah, yeah. All about the Court of Owls, which, you know, Jim's going to join now that his uncle, who had his dad killed himself. Yeah.
But
now that I've killed myself, Jim, you can join the Court of Owls because they'll be coming to you. Why would they be coming to him? Because he's a Gordon? Because it's like they can't have any members that aren't already members?
Not only that, but think about this. The guy shot himself in the temple. You know, classic mm-hmm. suicide pose, you know, put the gun up to your temple, yep. pull the trigger, shoot yourself. And then Jim claimed credit for it when the Court of Owls called him. He's like, I killed him. Yeah. Now, any forensic scientist worth their salt is going to immediately recognize that he killed himself, that this looks like a suicide. And Jim is not going to publicly say, no, I killed him, and risk going to jail just so that he can save face with the Court of Owls.
Yeah, no.
So what happens when the newspaper comes out that says that this guy killed himself?
Well, most likely they'll just – he's going to – I mean, I don't remember him reporting it. Did he just – did he conceal it?
Maybe
did
he bury the body? Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's going to keep it on hush-hush and just, oh, my uncle went missing. Right. Ooh, what a surprise. So.
Did you also, like me, have a problem with the fact that they went down to the dock to find the weapon that's coming in on boat, and they get there, and the guy's like, nothing's due to come in, but something came in last week, and it's in that box right over there, and it's been sitting here for a week. But there's still a guy in the next room with swords and a mask who's going to cut you open and kill you because he's protecting it. For what, a week? He's just standing around there sharpening his swords for a week in case anyone came down?
Yeah, that was weak sauce.
It just didn't make any sense.
Yeah, that was pretty weak. I agree with you there. And once again, they killed more people. I really wish I would have done this when the show started because I'm not going to go back and watch all the episodes now. But the body count on this show alone is just astronomical.
Yeah.
I mean, the pop. I mean, seriously. I mean, every episode, a dozen people get killed.
It's true. And that's just in the police department.
You know, the recruitment and retention of Gotham PD, I mean, the signing bonuses they have to give out to sucker people into come work there.
It's got to be insane. And there's probably a clause in there that says if you don't live past, you know, 30 days, then we get to take it back. It doesn't go to your next of kin.
If you don't live, nice. Nice. But yeah.
So the story's moving forward. I did read something that said they're not sure if they're getting into the season. I bet they will. You know, Fox.
I feel like they
Fox
will.
Isn't going to look at the numbers and be like, oh, we've got to pull it. They've invested enough in this show by now that they're going to be like, no, let's keep going. The producers did say that up around episode 22 or 23, we're probably going to get our first peek at who will become Harley Quinn, and that next season could focus a lot on Harley Quinn, but it's going to be the early stages, like Dr. Harleen Quinzel type of thing.
Oh, yeah.
She'll probably be a focus in the next season. And supposedly we're also going to get a proto-Bane.
A proto-Bane?
Yeah.
I don't like that.
Yeah, I don't know if that means, like, before he gets the Venom, you know, are we just going to see another luchador wrestler who becomes a thug and starts leading a gang, you know, but he's not Super Bane yet.
Yeah, I'm not cool with that.
I wouldn't be either. So
I'm not cool with that.
But then again, this is Gotham, so, you know, it could turn out that he's a Texan with a 10-gallon hat.
Yeah, that's true. And his name is Travis Bane.
Exactly. They do like to change shit up.
And he's got a song in his heart. hell. Anyhow, moving on. Supergirl. So I wasn't a big fan of this episode. It's the stereotypical – not stereotypical. It's becoming the formula of a lot of shows, but especially of this one. I know better than you. I'm going to overreact and jump into situations. By the end of the episode, it proves that I was wrong. I need to consider other people, and maybe I'm not always right. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It was very ABC After School Special.
Yeah, it really was. It was really like, you know, Alex's girlfriend. There, Maggie, thank you. You know, oh, I've been talking to this guy for 17 hours. You just kind of break in the ceiling and arrest him. And she's like, yeah, I got the job done. You're welcome. No, that's not what I was saying. Like, I had it handled. Well, they're in jail. I got it taken care of. Besides, now you're free for dinner. It's all good. It's like she's oblivious to other people. Because all of a sudden in this episode, Kara has a tremendous ego about herself, apparently.
Yeah, that kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah. She has a tremendous ego about herself. And then, like, you know, oh, I know what's best for everything. I'm going to – because, like – I don't feel like it's been depicted all season long that she just kind of dives in headfirst without thinking about things. Like, maybe in the first couple episodes she did, but, like, she's been taught to not do that since then and to look at things. And then this episode, no, it's just all emotional reaction.
Yes.
Emotional reaction, not thinking things through, on and on and on. because Alex gets kidnapped by a former classmate of theirs, of Alex's actually, who managed to figure out Kara's secret.
Because he remembered something that happened on the beach back when they were like 10 years old.
Yeah, back when Kara was like first here. So, and the reason why he did this is because he wants his dad out of prison. A dad he didn't really have a relationship with until he was older, but, you know, he loves his dad still and wants him out of prison.
And what a waste of Greg Henry's talent.
Oh, tremendous.
When I saw him, I'm like, oh, man, is he going to be a new villain? Is he gonna? And he was just some schlub in prison.
Yep.
But that guy was great. I love him.
Yep. And essentially, the bad guy creates almost insurmountable, you know, trap for Alex and for others to try to find her.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, it was super over the top. And then the whole time he's all like, you'll do what I say, because, you know, oh, and then of course, because, you know, Kara jumps in without thinking first, and Maggie's like, no, you know, you need to take your time to think about this. We gotta, he doesn't look like a guy who's been defeated. And she, and Ken, Kara's just like, screw you, I'm her sister.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, the blatantly obvious thing, oh, she went from having 20 hours left to 4.
Because, you know, that's how he set it up, magically.
Yeah. Which, I don't know, it seems like he was giving them an awful long time to find her and figure this out. Well, you know, 36 hours, and then, you know, when they pop the trap, it only sets the timer down to 4 hours still.
Now, the other thing is, well, there's a couple of things here. One, like, I wouldn't call myself lazy, but, you know, I don't know that even at my best revenge fantasy mode, I don't think that I could put that much time and effort into anticipating the moves of essentially a god and a police department and the DEO. This is part of the problem that I have with stuff like this, is when the writers allow their characters to be smarter than they should be. There's no reason that this guy should have had that much time to prepare this kind of, oh, I've been preparing this for a year. Yeah, but you really planned on everything that the DEO was doing. You really planned that Supergirl would go there and rip the top off that thing, and that that would trigger something that would magically turn the clock down to 4 hours and, you know, start water rushing into the thing. Like, who?
And by the way, it took 4 hours for water to fill up that room, that square box she was in?
Yeah.
No. That water was coming out a good clip. I mean, it's probably going to take at most a half hour.
Lex Luthor never came up with plans quite that involved. And he was a super genius.
He was a mastermind. Yeah, super genius, yeah.
Not only that, but...
Yeah. And then, of course... Oh,
I was
going
to say, so now we've seen 3 different roles for Maggie. So she was basically a beat cop that investigated alien stuff. Then she was a detective, you know, and now she's a hostage negotiator as well.
She's Mary Sue.
Yeah, they're giving her too much leeway. Like, what department does she work for that they allow her to do all this stuff? Like, 17 hours as a hostage negotiator? I think after an hour, they would have brought in a real negotiator.
Yeah, it's a bit ridiculous. It was a bit ridiculous. I mean, they're definitely making her, like, the only person on the force that matters, apparently.
Yep. And everyone else is just a blue shirt.
Yeah, right, exactly. Anyhow, and then, of course, by the end of the episode, you know, Kara's learned her lesson and realizes that, yes, so has Maggie, and realized, and Kara's learned that maybe someone else can love Alex just as much as I love Alex.
And they all live happily ever after till the next week. Except, let's also not forget the other storyline going on this time, and that was Lena Luthor and Terry Hatcher.
Yes,
and
yes,
Lena
yes.
proving once again that she is a good person and that she is very clever, you know, telling her, oh, I need your thumbprint here, and basically, oh, I've just confirmed you're an alien. I don't want to work with you. You lied to me. Get the hell out of my place.
Yep.
And then Terry Hatcher materializing on her balcony and saying, now you really have to work with me because I want to do what's right.
Essentially manipulating her.
Yep.
So, yeah.
They need to get rid of Terry Hatcher's character. I don't like that story arc. I don't like what's going
Agreed.
On.
Agreed. Agreed.
Let's get it out of here.
Let's get it done. I'm going to jump over to Arrow real quick so I can say my one note I have about Arrow, which is one word, three letters. Meh.
Yeah. They found a way to once again add more flashbacks into this show. And this time they weren't even of Oliver's time on the island. They were a couple months ago or a couple years ago.
Flashing back to when Felicity and Oliver were their relationship was building, I guess, and they were
working out together.
Maybe it was after it was over. Yeah, it was probably. Regardless, it was just basically this was a filler episode.
It really was. It was total filler.
This was a filler episode. This was a filler episode where at the end of last week they realized that was it. The guy's name's Chase, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, he's mapping that he's here at the building, and then an EMP goes off and it deactivates everything in the building, and then we find out that this building basically has a nuclear bomb underneath it somehow because it was built excessive in nature, yep. I guess, his secret lair. And, of course, Felicity's her device that allows her to walk was shut down with the EMP pulse, so now her legs are useless again.
But don't worry, because Curtis can flick it back on with, 2 seconds worth of looking at it.
Yeah, by the end of the episode.
The thing that's surgically implanted in her spine.
Yeah. They spend the whole episode basically, how do we get out of here? And then they get out, and then everybody's okay, and everything's fixed. And like you said, Curtis fixes her implant device so she can walk again. And we don't see Chase this episode. We do nothing but see and establish, Oliver and Felicity romance relationship storyline. And the only other underlying thing involved in there is Diggle's wife and how he feels she's not being honest with him or being dishonest, or she's acting like Amanda Waller. But then by the end of the episode, he's like cool with everything she does now.
That was the only thing that I found redeeming about this episode was the fact that they mirrored that in both Felicity talking to Oliver and Lila talking to John, where both of them, in both situations, the guy, Oliver or John, was saying to the woman, you're being devious, you're being underhanded, you were lying to me, whether it was talking about Hive or it was talking about Argus. You were lying to me and you were doing all this stuff behind my back and blah, blah, blah. And then Felicity / Lila both said, you do this all the time. This is your literal modus operandi. Lila was saying, John, you follow Oliver no matter what he does, and you guys have killed people, and you guys have done dark, devious stuff, and you've locked people away, and, I've always trusted you. Why is it that when I do it, I'm a criminal, I'm an asshole? And, Felicity saying the same thing to Oliver. I've seen the stuff that you've done, and I've seen the things that you've done in the name of protecting the city, etc. So why is it that when I do the same thing, I'm the creep? And basically, by the end of it, both guys were like, you're right. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the story really – I mean, like, you literally could take this episode out and not miss anything. It really accomplished nothing. They treaded water this whole week. And in doing so, just –
Why were there methane pipes in the basement?
Oh, what? The cool something. I don't know.
There's no reason for methane to be down there. And now that I've said that, now that I've made this statement, Martin's going to bust in with something that says, well, actually, in an underground bunker, methane is primarily used to, and it's going to blow me right
filter
out
or something or other. I don't know. Shut us down, Martin. Shut us down. And then, unfortunately, this pains me to say this, but when it comes to Flash this week.
Yep.
My note is, Savitar is future Barry.
I called it.
Meh. Like, I'm not – that does nothing for me. I'd rather have it be a character I didn't know at all rather than be the future Barry.
Really? I think it's great.
Yeah. Oh, I think it's terrible. Oh,
I like it.
What happened in his life that made everything so terrible that this is what he did and comes back and kills the love of his life, quote unquote? You know what I mean? Like, what happened along the way that made it so bad? And you would think once he killed Iris, things would change. Like, they might get worse, or they might get better, or who the freak knows? I have no interest in future Barry being Savitar. I think it's stupid.
Let me take a twist on that for you. See if I can convince you otherwise.
So, all right.
We've already seen future Barry, which was emo Barry. Pouting and crying and everybody sucks and Iris is gone. But here's the thing. Flashpoint is still on the table. Flashpoint was created and then destroyed by Barry. So this future Barry that we're seeing with the melted face is most likely a production of that, whether it's that he comes from Flashpoint or he was created in the wake of Flashpoint being undone. You know, what's his name there? Reverse Flash, when he had him trapped in that cell, he asked him, who's the villain now, Barry? You know, who's the villain in this story? You are. So we have two different future Barrys that we've seen. We've seen the emo one, and now we've seen this one that he says, I created myself. I am the future Flash. And I think we're going to find out tomorrow night that this future Flash that becomes Savitar is one that was robbed of all the love, of all the companionship, etc., by the collapse of Flashpoint. Somehow. Whether he's a remnant or whether he was created in an alternate timeline where none of these people ever knew him, supported him, etc. You know, maybe he lost Iris in his timeline early on, or maybe he lost the entire team and he's been stuck doing this on his own. They definitely drilled that home when he was doing his little, montage of clues, you know, what would happen to somebody if they didn't have all this love? What would happen to somebody if they were devoid of love in their life? And he was like, oh, that's why I know that it's him. This is also the person who talked to Alchemy and said, I want these people given their powers back because in Flashpoint they had these powers. So he was essentially trying to recreate part of the world of Flashpoint. I don't think that Savitar killing Iris is going to be like, I have to kill her because by killing her, that creates me in the future. I think that he's killing her because he wants this Barry to suffer the way that he suffered. We also had that message on the crossover episodes where they got – remember there was a message on the Wave Runner that was for Rip and it was from Future Barry. And he said, something big is coming. It's – beyond my control. You can't trust anyone, even me.
Yes, I do remember that.
So that future Barry probably knew about other Barry, which when I say that out loud makes me laugh because Archer has that character Barry, the android, who always talks to himself like that. You know, he'll say, Barry, what do you think? I don't know, other Barry, what do you think? So talking about other Barry, just a fun joke for me. But I really think that we're going to find that Flashpoint did more than just – because remember, we got different versions of Caitlin and Cisco as well. You know,
no, you're right. We did.
This Caitlin is Killer Frost, but not really. And this version of Cisco lost his brother.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
I know it's not ideal.
Not that I wasn't going to watch this week's episode or anything. But I mean, all right, you've sold me. You've sold me a bill of goods that I can buy into. hopefully it goes that way. We'll find out. We'll find out tomorrow night when it airs.
Yes,
and we watch it.
I'm excited about that because you know. And again, it's not just me going, "Ha! I called it. I knew this was." I don't even care about that.
Right.
If I had been wrong, I would have been fine. But I think that this is where they're going to go with it, and I can get behind that. I really can, as long as they do it the right way, which fingers crossed they do. You know, say that Flashpoint wrecked something. Say that it left him abandoned in his timeline. You know,
Give us a reason for him to be this way. Got it. So keep him with that superhero motif. Yes. Let's talk about S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
So, I mean, essentially, they find the back door out of the framework.
Yep.
You know? And Fitz and Simmons and Coulson and May and Daisy, they all manage to get through the framework and get out.
Whether they want to or not, in Fitz's case.
Absolutely. Exactly, in Fitz's case. And then Ratcliffe helps them.
And it was interesting, too, because to get up to that point, remember, Gemma went to look for Fitz's father. And she's like, what have you done to him? And blah, blah, blah. And they wrestle around, and he gets shot. And that version of Fitz is like, I'm going to kill her.
Yes.
And he does shoot her right in the knee.
He does. Well, that version of Fitz does shoot her in the leg when she won't get on her knees so we can execute her. And then Ratcliffe puts a stop to it because basically Ratcliffe is saying, the only reason why I told you where you can find them is that way we could get you out of here because that's the only way you would go. And so basically Ratcliffe wants to undo everything he did. And Mac chooses to stay in the framework because he doesn't want to live without his daughter.
He doesn't want to live without hope.
Even though he knows that he knows he's in this thing called the framework. He knows that he's digitally trapped in here, if you will. Because after when Coulson and May go through, or maybe it's just Coulson first, but when he goes through, like the whole room essentially, you know, like there's a big swipe that goes across, almost like, you know, everything's being digitally reset, if you will. Yeah. And that's when Max sees, oh my God, you're telling us the truth. Like, finally, he believes and accepts it and everything. So, but you notice no Ward in this episode whatsoever.
Nope, but there was Trip.
But Trip was in it, yes. Yeah.
I can't believe, but it seems odd to me that they would bring those two actors back for just a few episodes of a storyline of this season without something planned for the future. But maybe they did. You know, maybe they were just cool guys and, you know, they said, hey, if you've been willing, you know.
I mean, it makes sense, you know, for them to be in the framework like it were. So.
But we did see that the machine works. The looking glass works.
Yes.
And Ada was created as a living being. Who apparently can teleport?
Yeah, wasn't that weird? So basically, you know, you got Fitz, you got Coulson and May, and they're all, you know, they're out of the framework and they're in the room where they're being held.
Max's
still strapped to the bed because he doesn't go through. And when May and Coulson first come out, they see Ada attached to her machine, and we see Coulson pick up a scalpel, and what we don't see until later is that he removes her head.
Yeah.
But it's too late because Ada's already being downloaded with you in this body that she's being created by using the Blackhold.
Darkhold?
The Darkhold, I mean. Yeah, the Darkhold. So, Fitz, though, when he comes out, he's immediately like, he feels bad, he feels remorseful, he remembers everything that happened, every way he acted, how he was, and he's pretty shaken up by it all.
I like that. I was wondering how they were going to handle that when these people popped out, you know, whether they, like, were disoriented or if they remembered it as a dream or whatever, but no, they fully remembered being awake and conscious in that world and who they were, because Coulson and May both talk about that as well. And then Fitz comes out, and I mean, he's losing his shit. Because he shot Gemma. He ordered the airstrike that killed Mace, and he looks over and sees that Mace's bed is empty. And he's like, you know, I did all this. I killed those people.
And then when Ophelia walks in, it's almost like he looks at her and he has feelings for her.
I couldn't tell.
I couldn't tell if he was confused, but you know, she talks to him and then somehow she teleported?
That was really weird. She's like telling him, she's like, feel my heartbeat. You can feel it. Now feel my skin. It's all real and we can be together and we can have our love and there's so much we could do. And she wraps her arms around him and they just blink out of existence. Just like a little blue flash and boom, gone.
Blink. From Battlestar Galactica.
Blink.
And they jump. That's what happened. It was a good episode.
It was.
It was a really good episode. We have two episodes left this season.
Yep.
I really love the three separate storylines. I love the fact that we got Ghost Rider coming back for the finale. Yeah. And I'm pretty excited to see where these next two episodes go, to see how it ends up.
I'll tell you, this was a bit of a disappointment for me, and so I'm going to share it with you. But they did have the next time on S.H.I.E.L.D.
I didn't see that, but go ahead.
It looks like they're dealing with the catastrophes because, you know, in this episode we saw that they were draining a lot of power on the Blackbird.
Yes.
No, it's not the Blackbird. That's the X-Men. Anyway, I can't even think of the name of the ship.
Quinjet.
Basically, yeah. The big Quinjet that they have flying around in the sky that Daisy and Simmons were on in their catatonic states. It was draining too much power, so they had to, like, cut the heat and cut some of the life support, and then they cut the cloaking, and now the Russian guy has sent a fighter jet up there, basically a MiG up there, to shoot them out of the sky. So they're dealing with that and possibly being shot out of the sky next week, or this week now. And meanwhile, the submarine seems to be having problems of its own. And they showed scenes of, like, Coulson and May trying to, you know, stop leaks and plug up gaps and stuff like that. And it looks like it's going to sink. But the very last scene that they showed was the water rising dangerously high and Max still strapped into his bed, still asleep, and the water coming up to, like, his neck and his mouth. So, in other words, we could have been left with the idea that, you know, Max is going to live out the rest of his days in the framework and just be fine and whatever, or they'll try to figure something out. But now you know that they're going to have to try to figure something out and get him out of there. You know, whether it's him inside there saying, no, I've got to go back, or, you know, whatever's going to happen, you know that there's more coming with that.
Well, I may wait and watch both episodes back to back. Yeah. I may wait and do that.
I can get that.
Because, you know, it's a two-part episode.
Right. I can understand wanting to do that with something like that.
So, Superstore.
Yes. Holy God.
So, I did not expect to have happen. Like, first of all, going into this, I did not realize that it was the season finale.
Okay. I did.
So this was the season finale episode as well. Glenn has to fire six people. Yep. And so they tease for, like, the first half of the episode, who's he going to fire, how's he going to pick them, on and on and on. And then finally when he's forced to do it, he just rattles off their six names. And then the tornado warning goes off.
Yeah.
And now they're trapped in the store together. And I thought that's how it was going to go. Like, you'd have the comedy play out of the awkwardness of them being trapped in the store together and people doing their own thing and everything. One of my favorite parts is Jonah and Amy's off hiding together by the pharmacy or something, and there's some guys just like, hey, the razors, I mean, these, you know,
it says
these buy two, get one free, two for one, but there's two in this pack, so that means, like, do I get two packs for one, or is it there's two in a pack, so that's the two, and you know, it's like you're paying the price of one, or like the people that were standing at the counter waiting to be checked out during at one point.
That brings back so many memories.
I love those little cut-ins and cut-arounds that they do.
They're just like, why isn't somebody ringing me up? You know, the tornado warnings are going off, there's no power in the building, and they're like, why isn't anyone ringing me up?
But basically, Amy and Jonah kiss.
Yeah. Very deep and passionately.
They share a kiss together. Oh, yes, because they're very fond of each other. And then the tornado hits the store, and it friggin' guts the place. Like, I was shocked.
Like, ripped out the ceiling.
I was absolutely shocked. Oh, and then don't forget the guy outside picking the carts up.
I can't remember
the whole
name, but I felt so bad for him. Like, they kept cutting away to him, picking up carts. Like, you know, you'd see an entire string of, like, 20 carts just go flying through the parking lot. And then a little while later, he'd be out there, like, wheeling those back. And just as he gets them back, another string goes flying. And he's like, oh. And then when he finally, like, seems to have them under control, he looks up, and there's a tornado bearing down on him.
Oh, yeah. It was pretty. And then after the tornado passes and they cut to, like, the aftermath and everyone's being checked out or looked on, and Amy's husband and daughter show up. And so now, maybe she's back with him. And then Dita starts doing the checkoff list, and she gets to that one name and is like, oh, no, he's not here. It was the guy doing the carts.
Exactly. I was like, no.
Yeah. So, but it was funny. It was a funny episode. And, I think it has been renewed for another season already.
Yes, it has. Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to what they're going to do from here. But this whole concept of the tornado thing, as I'm watching it, I thought, oh, man, because I didn't know it had been renewed for another season yet. I'm like, are they going to kill everybody right. off and that's how they're going to end the show? Because NBC did that once before with the TV show Grand.
Oh, really?
Yeah, this was back in the early 90s. It was a TV show called Grand. And essentially, like, a tornado came through in the final episode and everyone in the cast got wiped out, like they just disappeared. And this guy shows up at the end, like the one guy that didn't, and he shows up with the trailer supposed to be, and it's just gone. And then, you know, closing credits. Oh, so, wow.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that show. I'm looking forward to it coming back.
Yeah, same here.
Speaking of renewals, they did say that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. hasn't been officially renewed for season 5, but somebody on the inside said, oh, yeah, don't worry. I've heard that they are renewing it for season 5. So they'd be dumb not to at
this
point. Well,
one show that I've heard has officially been canceled is Emerald City.
I heard that too.
Yeah, which is kind of a shame because it was a solid show.
It really was.
Yep.
I was looking forward. But, I mean, they kind of ended it on an okay note for the most part.
Yeah, for the most part. So, I'm up to The Blacklist.
Yes.
You know, another good episode.
Yeah.
This whole tension stuff between Kate and Red is great television.
It is. Like, she even talked to him this time. She's like, she was on the train and he shows up at the car and the woman's like, oh, you must be Red. She said to give you this. And he calls her and she's like, I'm going to this place. You know what's there, right? You'll never catch me in time.
Yep. Nah, it was a really good episode.
Yep.
Really good episode. They're playing the game of human chess, if you will.
And we're learning more about both of them. You know, basically this one was, she went to this guy and was like, hey, guess what? You remember when your son disappeared and died? That was Reddington. And, you know, she's half telling the story and then Reddington's half telling the story by saying that he essentially wanted to make the guy an ally. So he created a problem that
he was going to solve.
And it was supposed to just be like a kidnapping, but it got out of control. And
Yep, it did.
Great episode.
But this is a guy that Red's a partner with. Like, the majority of Red's criminal organization is kind of hand-in-hand with this guy based on access he has to airports and securities and this, that, and everything. So, you know, ultimately when Red goes to talk to him about it, the guy's like, I'm going to kill you. And Red's like, nope. Because apparently Red's had an inside guy there for 25 years who takes them all out, and then Red kills him.
Yep.
And essentially Red's like, all right, well, our business is going to suffer quite a bit now. So, And then the other storyline is Agent Wessler was kidnapped, and basically Kate had this memory specialist who's wiped out Elizabeth's memory a couple of times, implant a memory that the girl, you know what I'm talking about. I can't think of her name.
The woman there.
Anyways, everyone hates her.
She was overseeing. Cabal.
Yeah, exactly. But she's like an attorney general or something in the government. Basically, that there's this case that Wessler's been trying to solve, and that there was a witness, and that she abducted the witness, and now he's going to go get her back. And essentially, they're basically sending Wessler up to go kill this girl.
Right.
And by planting false memories and taking memories away and this and that. And ultimately, Elizabeth and company stop him from doing it. But in the end, because he did what he did, and he shot a guy outside and home invasion, on. Even though he was brainwashed, essentially, they still arrested him. So now Wessler's kind of out of the picture.
Yeah.
And the other thing on there as well is, you know, Wessler and his old friend who was running the task force to bring Reddington down. You know, he's got all these bodies. He's digging deeper and deeper and deeper. And, you know, Wessler can't be a go-between anymore now. And he's starting to find out things he shouldn't be finding out.
Yep.
So there's a lot of fronts going on. And they're all being handled really, really well with some great details.
Yes.
Yeah, there's some great detail going on. So, I mean, this is definitely building to a pretty grand finale this season.
I'm excited. And I really hope that it's not the series finale, but
I know there's been talk of that.
It feels like it could be going in that direction and that it would be okay. I hate to say that, but if they keep it up like this, then it could be okay because we're really getting some closure.
And I don't want a watered down version of this show.
Right.
Not by a long shot.
Right. Yeah.
So, you got anything else you watched?
I do, actually.
TV show-wise,
yep,
I mean?
Yeah. I want to gloss over a couple of them, but I want to get into details on a couple others. Okay. Archer continues to be very good this season. That's one of those shows that if you're not watching it, you wouldn't get it. But it's really intelligently done humor, and I really enjoy it. So it continues the,
nice,
the good theme they got going on with the Dreamland. Lucifer came back this week, and it turns out that you know, there was a lot of drama and blah, blah, blah. But it turns out that the blade that Azrael had that can kill an angel was actually, in fact, his mother tells him this was the flaming sword that Michael used to quell the rebellion that Lucifer had led back in the day. And the flaming sword is the one thing that can cut open the gates of heaven and let them back in. So Mom and Amenadiel and Lucifer are all going to try to use the blade to reignite it, to make it the flaming sword again so that they can march back into heaven since they've all been banished to hell. Actually, I don't know that Amenadiel has, but he hasn't been able to get back up to heaven because, you know, he kind of was healed with Lucifer's wings. So I'll be interested to see how that plays out. And iZombie, I still love this show. I still think that it's great television. It's really, it's a fun, quirky show, and I just can't get enough of it. It's not the type of thing where I'm like, this is the greatest show. I would probably not list it in like my top 10 shows, but it would be in the top 20. It's a really good show. It's really well done. The characters are well developed, and, you know, it's definitely the kind of thing that if somebody said, geez, I was thinking about watching this, I'd say, yes, go watch it. You're going to have a lot of fun with it. And all I'll say about Big Bang Theory is at least it's almost over for the season, but they said that the last two, which is Amy Farrah Fowler and Bernadette, just signed contracts, so now the show is going on for at least 2 more years.
You know, I'm kind of behind on that show, and I don't even feel bad about it.
Yeah. You shouldn't. So then I've got 3 shows that I wanted to dig into a little bit here, one of which I'm assuming you watched, which is Fargo.
Yes, I did watch me some Fargo,
okay,
actually.
Sounds like you and I are going to disagree on this one.
The one thing I liked about it, basically this whole episode takes place in Los Angeles.
Yep.
And they even say at the beginning they took out Minnesota and put Los Angeles when they do the "this is a true story," you know, da 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 da. So I thought that was kind of neat. They updated
yep.
it, but essentially, the long and the short of it is this: the sheriff there, I can't think of her name.
I want to say Carrie, but I don't know if that's it.
Yeah, she's the chief of police of the small town department that got absorbed by the sheriff, the county sheriff's
right.
department. So the chief, her stepfather was murdered. In the first episode, she found books by a guy named Thaddeus something that she can't figure out why he has copies of these books. Okay. So
Gloria.
She also finds Gloria. Okay. So Gloria also finds a couple other things, like this autographed photo from this Hollywood celebrity and the fact that his real name was actually the author, Thaddeus, whatever.
Mobley.
Mobley, thank you. It was actually Thaddeus Mobley who wrote the book. So now she's like, well, why did he write these books? Why did he change his name? Who's this girl? And she tracked down the fact that he had lived in L.A. for a while. So she went to L.A. to investigate this and track it all down. And essentially, the show opens up with this like 10-minute montage of Thaddeus when he was in the 70s or the 60s, when he was younger. He's in L.A. He just won an award for his book. He meets a shyster of a Hollywood producer type guy who basically bilks him out of money. And the autographed photo, the girl there, she – also used him in getting money out of him and everything, got him on drugs and this and that and everything. So essentially that's the opening 10 minutes is we establish who he is when he's younger, the Hollywood shyster, and then the starlet that screws him over. And then now we go to Gloria coming into LA to lead her investigation to try and figure all this out. And the episode is intercut with the flashback scenes and the current scenes and her piecing everything together. And the long and the short of is this. He goes to L.A., he wins an award for his book, he gets hooked on drugs, hooks up with this girl, gets screwed over by this guy, they bilk him out of all kinds of money. When he confronts them about it, they basically say, you're a putz, we used you, you're a loser, just deal with it, okay, pal, and they even assault him. So he snaps, and he takes this Hollywood, this shady producer, knocks him down, grabs his cane, and just starts beating him with it, which essentially this puts this guy in a home for the rest of his life because he's been so, like, damaged. And he goes to – he throws the girl on the ground but then doesn't hit her, just says she's a bad person. He goes back to his hotel. He's freaked out. He's vomiting in the toilet, on and on and on. And then that's it. He leaves L.A. and eventually, you know, he goes and – he has these two books that he published that, you know, never really did anything more than that. And long down the way, he becomes Gloria's stepdad. And then it kind of comes full circle around to her investigating the whole thing and her discovering all this and talking to that starlet and talking to that Hollywood producer. And then the biggest problem I had with the whole episode, and I know I'm taking up the time, I apologize, was at the end when she goes to pick up something off the floor in the bathroom and she sees that in the toilet on the back side there's a stamp that says, like, it's the Stussy Brothers.
It's Dennis Stussy and Sons.
Dennis Stussy and Sons toilets. And the D in Dennis has kind of been scraped off, so it just says Ennis Stussy. And that's where he got the name. His false name was from when he was throwing up in the toilet, he saw that. And I went, oh, come on. That same toilet's not going to be in that same hotel for 35 years. And even if it was, there's no way the rest of that didn't get wiped or washed away in 35 years of toilet cleaning. That little stamp yep. thing that was already damaged to begin with. So that's the episode, right?
Yep.
Good summation. Did I miss anything?
The only thing that you missed that I would add is this episode sucked donkey balls. I fucking hated this episode with a passion. Like,
yeah, it wasn't very
good.
Dude,
if this episode had been the premiere of this season, not only would I have stopped watching, I never would have watched another episode of Fargo if it had gone on for 10 more seasons.
Yeah, I would say that it's a good thing the show had two other seasons to fall back on, plus two other episodes the season before this, because you know how good it can be compared to how it is now.
I saw people reviewing this online, and they were talking about how brilliant it is and how genius it is, and I thought, these people don't understand these words. They are throwing around words like brilliant and genius in the wrong capacity. Because
I wouldn't say this was brilliant or genius. It was definitely very long, drawn out story building.
It was slow. It was dull. Like you said, that was stupid. She happened to find the same hotel he was staying in. Happened to find the same room. You know, it was not like she had a receipt that said, "Oh, he stayed at this hotel." This was the first place that she got to. And
I'm sorry.
Happened to have the same room with the same rubbed off part of the toilet, so that she's like, oh, that's how he picked his name, ha 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 ha. And yeah, what was up
there
with
was
the
some
damn
weak
box
sauce
that was in the closet that you flicked the switch and a hand reached out and flicked. Oh, and you did forget one thing, which was the interspersal of his story.
Yes, I was just going to mention that. Yes, throughout the episode she's reading the book and they keep showing like a little cartoon animated thing to go along with her reading of the book of this little android monster that for 2.3 million years walked the earth, basically saying nothing more than, I can help.
Yep.
And then these alien race finding him and saying, you did a great job. You can now deactivate yourself. And his head pops open and there's a switch that he pushes. And I think that's where the box and the switch comes from.
But still, like, what was the box doing in the closet? I mean, I understand that they were trying to parallel that, but... And then she took the box with her and put it in the back of her police cruiser back in Minnesota.
I know. We had some weak sauce.
We had stupid things like, you know, her, some Santa, because they're having a Santa convention, grabs her suitcase and runs away with it. So she calls the local police and they show up and they're like, yeah, you're never going to get that back. But the guy's like hitting on her as he's taking her statement, and then calls her up and says, hey, you should come down to the local bar. And then basically, hits on her a little bit, tells her he's got to drop the kids off at the pool. And she's like, oh, you've got kids? He goes, no, I got to take a shit. And so he goes to take a shit, and then he comes back out, and she's talking to the mysterious guy that she was talking to on the plane, who now is mysteriously here in the same room. But there was never any resolution.
Yes.
They never talked about why he was there. And then the guy comes out, and he's like, so I'm just going to lay it out there. Am I getting laid or not?
Yeah, you're kind of cute. Am I getting laid tonight or not? Or what? And she's like, she goes, or what? And he goes, all right, well, thanks for the beers. And he grabs his two beers and walks off.
But everything of this episode was boring, dull, ridiculous. Like, I didn't care about these characters. And that's the thing, too, is like all of this digging that she's doing has absolutely nothing to do with the overall story, because Ennis only died as an accident because he happened to have the same last name as the guy that he was supposed to, that the criminal was supposed to steal the stamp from. And that criminal is dead now.
Yes. Which they did establish at the end of the episode. That was mentioned where they found fingerprints in the room, and it goes to this guy who's on probation, but a fluke accident. He died when the air conditioner fell on him. So they were going to go check that out when the episode ended. So yeah, it definitely was the worst episode of any season of this show.
I honestly, I got done with this episode and I was like, I hate this episode. I hate this episode so much. I haven't hated an episode of TV this much in quite a while. Yeah. And
well, I don't know about that. There's some episodes of Arrow I've hated more.
Because
I didn't hate the episode. I was just like, wow, that was different.
Yep. And that's fine. I'm not saying you have to hate it. You know, we've had differing opinions on other things tonight even. But for me, it was abysmal. And I honestly don't know if I'm going to watch this next week. I noticed that there's a conflict on my DVR, and I went to like resolve that by recording Fargo later. And I'm like, I got to really think if I want to record it or not. Because after last week's episode with, you know, the I'm going to send him a message by pulling my tampon out and writing in period blood and then leaving the tampon in his drawer.
Yeah.
And then this week's episode that was just god-awful, you know, I don't know if I want to keep watching.
Well, fair enough. Fair enough. I'm going to keep watching.
I assumed you could let me know if I made a mistake or not.
I absolutely will. So you watched any other new shows this week, it sounds like?
Yes, two new shows. One of them, I watched all four existing episodes of The Handmaid's Tale.
Oh, my wife and I, she finally finished the book, so we are going to be starting that soon.
I have not read the book. It is a good show. I'm enjoying it, but I'm enjoying it trepidatiously because it is a very dark world.
Yes. I've heard a lot of good stuff about it, though, from other people.
Yes.
About the show.
As long as you accept the fact that, you know, everything about it is dark and twisted.
Well, the book is dark and twisted. Yes. I mean, think of the storyline of what it's about.
The thing that really makes it hard to swallow in places is the fact that it's based on some of the fears that everybody has right now based on or surrounding the existing government, you know, the people that are in power right now. I don't want to turn this into a political discussion. You know,
no, and I don't either. But look at the fact that the next season of American Horror Story is completely about the Clinton and Trump presidential campaign.
Yeah.
So,
Based on everything that has happened surrounding this past election and the people that are in power now, you know, this world in A Handmaid's Tale is eerily close to what people have been fearing. So,
that's pretty bleak. Yep.
The story is told well. You know, there is some overdubbing narration, which is nice. the episodes progress well. The pacing's good. There is a mystery going on. They don't tell you what happened outright. You have to kind of piece it together from what people talk about in the present. And then there are flashbacks to, like, right before all of this happened. So you get little hints here and there, but nobody comes right out. It's not like, you know, some stories will say, in 2017, a nuclear bomb was dropped and this happened and this happened and blah, blah. You know, they kind of spell it out for you. You don't get that with this. You have to kind of piece it together from the little bits that you get here and there, which makes sense. You know, that's, it'd be kind of like if you were asking a group of people, what was, you know, what had happened, and all of them started talking at once, so you could only catch, like, little bits here and there.
You know, while you're talking, yeah, my brain went to that movie with, I think it was a Clive Owen, where it's like that post-apocalyptic future world or desolate world where people can't reproduce or whatever, and he finds a pregnant woman.
Oh my God, what was that?
All I can think of is Shoot 'Em Up, but I know it's not that. And he remember, like, there's the scene at the near the end of the movie where she gives birth on, like, the top floor of this building. Mm-hmm. And there's all these warring factions around them. And as he's trying to get them out of the building, everyone's around them is fighting. And then the baby cries and everyone stops. And they just turn and look. And they just watch as this woman and the baby and him, like, get out of this building. And everyone stops fighting. No one approaches them. No one does anything. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of what I was thinking about what you're mm-hmm. saying. Is like that movie where you're at a world now where people haven't seen a baby in so long that when they hear one, they're just like spellbound. Right. And then, of course, they commence the fighting once they clear the building. But still, I don't know. Sorry.
So anybody who's interested in this show, I'll give you a brief synopsis without any spoilers. But basically what they tell you pretty much in the beginning is that we live in a world where most of the population, most of the women are barren. There are a few women out there who are not barren, who can have children. They are immediately made into handmaids. They dress in red. They have white hats that they wear. And they're basically treated like property. And the wealthiest of the men and women out there who are married, they'll have a handmaid. And the handmaid is used primarily to have children for them. Yep. And I won't go any deeper than that, but it is a very bleak show. You're not going to find sunshine yes. and happiness here.
No.
What's really weird, too, is that they've already announced, they announced this week, that Hulu has renewed it for a second season. Mm-hmm. And this is really weird because this is based on a book, a famous book that people have been reading for years.
Yes.
I was under the assumption that the first season or the season, 10 episodes, was going to cover the book.
Yeah, me too. It's kind of surprising hearing you say it's been renewed.
And the article mentioned that the author of the book was thinking about doing a sequel. I don't know if that means presently she's thinking about doing a sequel or if it's the type of thing where she thought about it at one point and made some notes and they're like, well, based on these notes, we'll do our own season two. If that's the case, I don't think that I want to watch it because it seems like they'd be doing their own thing. It could work. You know, this most recent season of Game of Thrones worked really well.
Yep. Yeah, and I'm looking forward to the final seasons of Game of Thrones coming up.
Amen. So. And but yeah, that's all I'll say about Handmaid's Tale. I'll be interested once you started watching it to get your thoughts.
Well, before you jump into your other new show, my wife and I have been watching 13 Reasons Why.
Yes, yes.
I think we're up to either we watched episode 8 or at episode 8. One or the okay. other. So either we watched episode 8 or we're at episode 8. So, and basically, you know, there's – I'm not going to get into great detail on it. I'll just say that, like, it's a very controversial subject, obviously. You have a teenage girl that's committed suicide. She left 13 tapes behind. There are 7 tapes, 13 sides, I guess, that basically are – you know, this is why I did this. These are the people that in my life that affected me and why they caused me to do right. this. And it's a very controversial subject. And, you know, they have different characters in the show that I guess they do a good job representing how people feel about the subject. You know, like sometimes people come off as cold or heartless. Like when in one episode, when there's like earlier talk about suicide or people writing dark things and this and that. And like some people are like, they're expressing opinions that you hear every day, yep. You know, and it's not just a one-sided tale. You know what I mean? You're not – like the primary focus is her telling her story, but you are seeing this from multiple angles, how it affects her parents, other parents, the community, the school, how kids feel about it, kids being honest about how they feel about it, and this, that, and everything else. So I mean like I feel like they're covering a very controversial subject in a very and they're doing a good job of it, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like they're doing a good job covering the subject by showing the broad spectrums of people's reactions and emotions and whatnot. Okay. You know, which I think is good. I mean, because it's not – they're not preaching at you like an ABC After School Special type of thing where the person who expresses a counter opinion about it isn't treated as like, you know, an idiot backwards thinker.
Okay.
You know what I mean? They're basically like, well, you know, everyone's entitled to their opinion about things. You know what I mean? Right. I don't know. There was one episode was pretty weak, and my wife and I were debating if we were going to watch any more. But then the synopsis of the next episode was like, all right, well, let's watch one more. And that, which is the most recent one we watched, so I think it's episode 8, was really, really good. So it's like, all right, they've brought us back in enough, we're going to keep going. But like one episode was really just kind of like, I don't know. I've heard a lot of people love it. I've heard a lot of great things about it. I've heard some bad things about it. So I don't know. I'm going to finish it out.
That one just got renewed for a second season as well.
What?
Yeah.
Seriously. This is also based on a book.
Yeah. So I'm thinking it's the same thing. I'm thinking that they're basically going to create another.
This does not seem like a show that a second season should be built on.
That's been happening a lot lately.
Because, I mean, it's the premise of the show is a girl who killed herself and left tapes behind.
Mm-hmm.
And the 13 Reasons Why are the 13 sides of the tapes. Yep.
So then they're probably going
telling her story.
Another one, you know, where another person commits suicide and leaves behind, you know, 13 notes or something. I don't know. I just know that they said that it's already been renewed for a second season. And
wow.
That tells me that they just want more money.
I really feel like this is a topic that you can't exploit like that. You know what I mean? Like, it's not something that's going to work constant. Like, it's working this one time because they're handling it in a very well – they're doing a great job with it. You know what I mean? With the subject material. But it's not something that you can create. Like, I can't see how you – this a topic you would create multiple seasons about, multiple different – versions of the same story.
I agree.
Wow. Like, that surprises me.
Huh. Yeah.
That surprises me. You watched another new show?
Yes. I watched the first episode of American Gods.
How was that?
It was awesome.
Really?
Yeah. It was, it's crazy and it's weird. And I really like it. It starts off, and apparently they did a little behind the scenes afterwards, so I'll jump around a bit here. But they said that they wanted to start or include in every episode one of these, they called it Coming to America stories from the book. So basically you see this guy, and he's like got quill to parchment, and he says like Coming to America, and then it's like 813 CL or something, you know, so it's not AD or BC. And it tells the story of these Vikings, a single Viking longboat that came to the shores of America for the first time ever, and how they had been out to sea and, you know, their rations had dried up already and their water had dried up and they didn't know what they were expecting, and they finally found land. You know, they thought they were going to die, and they finally found land, and they pulled up on shore, and they were disappointed because they didn't see the riches that they expected. They didn't see the large-breasted women that they could bring back with them. All they found were stinging bugs and sand and grass. And it's all like acted out. You know, there's a narrator talking, and you've got all these Viking guys who are, you know, pulling their longboat up, and swatting bugs off each other's faces and stuff. So they step up onto the beach and decide to step towards the grass. And it's one of the funniest things I've seen. And they said in the behind the scenes that they really wanted to go over the top with this. Sorry, I keep having to pause to cough. And one Viking steps 1 foot into the grass, and he is shot and impaled by, I would dare say, 100 to 200 arrows. And this is not like that scene in Hero with Jet Li where, like, the rain of arrows comes down and it hits him and all around him. Every one of these arrows hits directly into the guy from his feet all the way to the top of his head. Not one of them misses him. So it's just rapid, suddenly this, and he is just literally covered in arrows and falls over backwards. And you have to laugh at that point because it's so absurd that somebody would shoot that many arrows all at once.
I kind of want to see this.
And you never see the people that did it. Like, the Vikings all look around at each other and like, what the hell? So one of them takes one step forward and like four arrows appear at his feet. You know, thump, 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 thump. Just right down in the ground at his feet. And they're like, okay, we're not going to the grass. So they decide, screw this, we're going home, but there's no wind to take their sails. So they decide, well, we can get the wind. We just have to beseech our god. And they never say the name, but it's Odin. You know, their god, the All-Father. But then they realize, wait, our god is back in our homeland. He's not here. So they decide to bring him here by carving an effigy. You know, a totem of Odin. And they put it up, and they're like, there, now Odin's here, he can hear our prayers. But the wind doesn't come. So they try different things, like, at one point, the captain of the ship or whatever, I mean, it's just a longboat, but the leader of the group, there's a fire there, and he's got a dagger, and he's got the dagger stuck in the fire, and all of his men are lined up, and he walks down the line, and each one of them, in turn, braces, and he stabs them in their left eye. And then he stabs himself in the left eye because Odin was missing his left eye. So he's saying, you know, we're sacrificing this for you, Odin. There's still no wind. So then they sacrifice one of their men. They build a pyre and they burn him alive. And he's writhing and kicking and screaming. And the wind picks up a little bit. So then they're like, oh, wait, our god is a god of war. So they literally do a shirts and skins battle royale. They line up, one group takes their shirts off, and they go nuts on each other. And this was another thing in the behind the scenes where they said, we talked to the guy who was doing the special effects, and we showed him, like, they show pouring gallons and gallons of fake blood into these mannequins and then chopping the heads off and stuff, and there's blood spraying everywhere, and the guy's like, no, it's not enough. This was one of the bloodiest, most gruesome battles for only, like, 10 guys, but arms are getting chopped off, legs are getting chopped off, and the fake blood, Mike, was flying everywhere.
So what is this show about? Is it a fictional, like, show?
It's very fictional.
Is it a docudrama?
It's very fictional. It's by Neil Gaiman, you know, who did, like, Good Omens, and he did the Sandman comics and Discworld. So this is only part of the backstory. Because basically, like, once they kill enough of each other and carve enough of each other up, the wind picks up huge. So they all jump in the boat, and the narrator says, you know, they didn't even tend their wounds. They just got in the boat and left. And when they got back to their homeland, not one of them ever set foot in a boat again. And it wouldn't be until years later, like 100 years later, that Leif, son of Eric the Red, would set foot on American soil again and find that his god was already there. The rest of the show, that's like the first 5-10 minutes. The rest of the show is all modern day. And it follows a guy named Shadow Moon who's getting out of prison. He's having these weird visions and he's meeting up with some very interesting people. I'm not going to give away everything because this really needs to be watched to be appreciated. But Ian McShane plays a character who
I like him.
Oh, yeah. And he calls himself Mr. Wednesday because he meets up with Shadow Moon on the plane and he's talking to him and offers him a job. And he's like, well, what's your name? And the guy's like, what day is it? And he's like, it's Wednesday. And he goes, then that's my name, Mr. Wednesday. He goes, that's my day after all. And the thing is, in Norse mythology, Odin was Wednesday. That was his day. And then Thor was Thursday or Thor's day. So you know that Ian McShane is basically playing Odin. It's, it's these gods, embodiments of gods, who are living in America. Part of the problem is that Neil Gaiman is very British, and so some of his depictions of American things from the book were a little bit outdated or not quite right, but it's still become one of his most popular works ever. And it's a really fun show. Like, that whole Viking thing was pure amusement, but it was setting up the fact that this is how Odin got to America. This is how an embodiment of Odin was brought to the Americas, whereas he was a Norse deity. But in the modern day, these gods seem to be doing their own thing. There is also a scene, you may see this in your Facebook feed at some point, but we meet a female god named Bilquis, and there is a sex scene that she is involved in, and it's one of the oddest sex scenes you will ever see. I'm not going to talk about what it is. You really have to see this to understand it, but in the behind the scenes, they said, we had to do this. Everybody kept asking us, what are you going to do about that scene? What are you going to do about that scene? And we did it exactly as it's written on the page, because there is no other way to do that. And I went, wow, okay, well, good for them for doing that.
What channel is this show?
It's on Stars.
It's on Stars, yep. Okay. All right.
I get it because, like I said, I have Amazon Prime, and so for $8 a month, I can get Stars, and I do that so that I can watch Ash vs. Evil Dead, and now also American Gods. And they've got a couple other shows on there as well, like Outlander. There was that one that Patrick Stewart was in recently. I can't remember the name of it, but he was like a talk show host or something. I really wanted to check that out.
Yeah, I think I know which one you're talking
about.
But
I've got to say, American Gods, one episode in so far, and it's definitely entertaining. It is fun. It reminds me kind of Preacher, but where Preacher was on TNT, so they couldn't get away with a lot of stuff.
Yep.
This is getting away with all the stuff.
Nice.
Yep, so definitely, if you get a chance, check this out. I'm strongly recommending this to everybody. As of last night, the new episodes come on Sundays. So as of last night, there's a new episode. I'll be checking that out probably tomorrow because I can't wait. Yeah.
Got any more shows to talk
about? No, that wraps it up from shows.
Any movies?
Negative, sir.
I have a couple movies to talk
about. Excellent. Let's hear it.
The first one is I watched Split.
Ah.
The M. Night Shyamalan sucks ass along guy, who hasn't made a good movie in a really, really, really long time.
Not since Unbreakable, I believe.
Not since Unbreakable, yeah. Finally managed to make a good movie again.
So you liked it.
I was genuinely, like, I went into this. I know you said it was great. I know Martin said it was great. And if you notice, it didn't take me nearly as long as it took everyone else to watch Blair Witch. Martin still hasn't watched it yet. But I didn't go in. I didn't have high hopes. I wasn't going in expecting a whole lot. But I gotta say, you know, like it's a good story. It's very interesting. James McAvoy, phenomenal in this movie. Absolutely phenomenal. I mean, as he is switching from persona to persona to persona to persona, I mean, like, you can see it. Like, just when, like, there's the scene where he's looking in the mirror and he's switching from one to the other, and just the way his body language, his voice, how he holds his mouth, his facial expressions, I mean, everything. You can see him going from one to the other. I mean, he does such a great job portraying all these different personalities. I mean, I don't know how much I want to get into it because I don't want to ruin it for everybody else. But I'd really like to talk about it in a couple weeks, maybe a little bit longer form, once people have time to see. I mean, it just came out, like, on DVD last week type of thing. But, man, I really, really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it a lot.
And, again, I'm not trying to be like, oh, I told you so. But, literally, I was surprised, too. I got dragged to it because, you know, Kelly was like, oh, you really got to see this movie. And I was like, come on, it's M. Night Shyamalan. I hate him. She's like, no, you're going to like this. And I was like, but you like him. So – and I was shocked.
I know. I was shocked how good. I mean, yeah, it has its faults. There's a couple of parts where you're like, what? But, I mean, even, like, you know, the beast, if you will, or the final persona, whatever it is you want to say. Even that, like, I'm just like, you know what? I can buy this because of Unbreakable. I can buy this. And then, of course, you know, in the mid credits or closing credits, whatever it is, you see it's kind of like a backdoor sequel, if you will, to Unbreakable.
Yeah. Because they have the people in the diner who, and this is not a spoiler, people. This is very lightweight stuff. But basically, they have a bunch of people in the diner, and they're listening to the news story of what happened, which we won't talk about here, like you said, you know.
Yeah.
But somebody goes, didn't a while ago they had something like that? There was that guy who had the bone problem, and Bruce Willis is down at the end, and he goes, Glass. His name was Glass. And you're like, whoa, it's like Unbreakable.
And now I've read that they're looking at doing a sequel to this, but it's kind of a joint Unbreakable and Split movie together.
And it's not that they're looking at it. They are doing it. They have announced that they are definitely doing it.
Yeah, I don't know if I'll go to the theater and see it, but I'll definitely watch it. James McAvoy was brilliant in this movie. I'm not sure it would be as good if he wasn't in it.
I agree.
You know what I mean? Like, to me, like, his – his portrayal – of the characters in this movie, the way he did it was, you know, Heath Ledger Joker-esque.
Yes.
You know, like, fantastic job.
Absolutely.
Great job. And, I mean, I'm surprised how much I really liked it.
It was shocking. I was shocked as well. Yeah. I remember saying that over and over again, like, I can't believe that this was a good movie.
Yeah. Really surprised. One more movie I watched. It was actually that I'm going to talk about. It was actually – it's a documentary. Okay. And this got posted on Hulu on the 6th, on Saturday the 6th. It premiered on Hulu. And I actually watched it in the wee hours of the morning on the 7th. And it's a documentary – it's a Hulu original documentary, and it's called Batman and Bill.
That showed up on my Hulu thing right off. Like, it was top.
You need to watch it.
Okay. I added it to my list, but I didn't get around to watching it.
Yeah, someone else, a guy, a friend on the internet, Brandon, had posted that he was watching this or had watched it and it was good or something when I was going through my Facebook feed or my Instagram feed or something like that. And I was like, oh, let me check it out. So I went and kind of put it on Hulu and I was like, found myself caught up on shows and I was like, I'm going to watch this. And it's about 93 minutes long and it's about a guy named Mark Nobleman and he is he's an author. He's written several books and he's the one that kind of did this documentary. And he basically he presents his findings about Bill Finger. Bill Finger worked with Bob Kane in creating Batman. And that's basically what the opening few minutes of the movie says is that, you know, I'm going to talk to you about how Bill Finger actually co-created Batman with Bob Kane but was never given any of the credit. And basically, he just presents the story about this. You know, his findings, what he found. You know, he has footage – not footage but recordings from what he kind of considers the first ever Comic-Con, which happened in New York in 1965, where Bill Finger was on a DC panel and he talks about – his early work with Batman and what he did with it. And I'm not going to give away a lot. I mean, that's what's said in the opening 3 minutes of the movie is him saying, you know, talking about Bill Finger. But basically, yeah, I mean, this becomes a one-man crusade, if you will, for Bill Finger to be given proper credit for what he did for Batman and that it wasn't just Bob Kane. That's what this guy sets out to prove.
Nice. Did he do it with a cape on?
No.
Okay.
No.
That's
but this is a pretty phenomenally awesome documentary. It's really, really good. Like it was a surprise because it was like, oh, what do I want to watch? Oh, what's this? Oh, let me check that out. Oh, wow, this is great. You know, so yeah, it's really, really good. Absolutely watch it, watch it, watch it.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Yep. It, like I said, it popped right up for me and I added it to my list because I was like, at some point, I'm probably going to want to watch that.
Yeah, you know, take the time. Watch it this week. I'd love to hear what you have to say about it. I mean, it's only an hour and a half, and there's a lot of stuff in there I'd never heard of before.
Nice.
And it's just kind of cool, you know, to see the history of everything, you know?
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Because they have, like, they have actual recordings from that Comic-Con 52 years ago. That was because someone recorded it. And you can hear these guys talking about, you know, that, to me, that's pretty amazing. Cool. You know, it's pretty amazing. So, You got anything else you want to talk about?
Yeah, a couple of things. One news article that we haven't touched upon, they just announced that you might know it as Edge of Tomorrow, or you might know it as Live, Die, Repeat. It was that movie with Emily Blunt and Tom Cruise where he kept going back.
Yep.
There's a sequel coming.
I actually enjoyed that.
I loved that flick.
Yeah.
There's a sequel coming. Both of them are signed on to be in it, and it's going to be called Live, Die, Repeat, and Repeat.
Yes, I saw that. I actually read that same article, yep. But it's a sequel with a different name.
Yep. I'm excited about that. Although the first one was kind of unique. He kind of had that tie to the creature, and that's why he was able to, repeat over and over again. So I don't know how they're going to do that this time, but mm-hmm. I'm sure that they'll come up with a way. If they're planning it, then they've probably got a way planned. So,
yes, I would say so.
The only other thing was that this was a big week for trailers.
Can I touch on a couple quick news items before we jump into trailers? Yeah, I just wanted to mention a couple things. Will and Grace is returning.
Yes.
With 12 episodes on a season 9 with the original cast, the original showrunners, the original producers, everything.
Which is pretty impressive.
So that should be pretty... Yeah, I mean, it's been like 15 years or something like that since the last season or maybe less than maybe... It's been at least 10 years since the last season of that. Yep. And Roseanne's coming back for another season.
Yeah.
And I liked the show when it was first on. I did not care for the final season or when we find out basically that everything was made up, but whatever. But I liked Roseanne, and it's going to have Laurie Metcalf and John Goodman and Roseanne Barr. So they're all going to be – they've all signed on to do this. And again, it's another one of those short season, 8, 6, 8, 10, 12 episodes, something like that. So I don't know. That's it. I got trailers to talk about.
Cool.
What do you got for trailers?
Well, they put out the first official trailer for the Defenders TV show.
That was awesome.
It really was. It really tied all those characters together. I loved having Stick narrate part of it.
Yes.
And basically tell them all to get their shit together.
Yes. Stick's a very Scott Glenn version of Scott Glenn from Sucker Punch. I had to do that, sorry.
I appreciate that. Nice callback to earlier in the episode.
It was a great trailer. Yep. I mean, it gets you excited.
And we see that Elektra's coming back, but maybe not.
That doesn't excite me.
But I think she's going to be coming back evil. And
yes, I would assume.
That, I was about to say the foot, that's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. The hand is going to feature predominantly. We still don't know what's going on with Sigourney Weaver's character, but she's definitely a big bad.
Yep, absolutely she is.
But yeah, overall, this trailer really got me pumped for the show. Like, that teaser in the elevator was like, oh, that's cool. This trailer got me pumped.
I like how Rosario Dawson... It's just like, no, you guys are all doing the same thing. Like, she basically brings them together. Her character kind of brings them together. And I love Iron Fist's, like, rundown of who they each are. I thought that was funny. And then, of course, we get the obligatory hallway fight scene in the trailer. Like, they show a clip of it. It's a bigger hallway because you have four people, four good guys in it, but still. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. This August, I think it is all episodes drop. Yeah. So
I like when they're walking down the hallway and Daredevil's got that scarf on, and she's like, "You look stupid." And he's like, "Hey, it's your scarf."
Yes, yeah. I got the scarf on his eyes. Yeah.
And at the same time, we got the first official trailer for the Dark Tower.
The Gunslinger. Yeah. Yeah, I gotta be honest, I told this to Jer. I never read the books, or I don't really know a whole lot about them, those Stephen King books, but that trailer looked pretty awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
I'm not a big Matthew McConaughey fan, but I am a huge Idris Elba fan.
Yep.
And that trailer looked badass.
I'm a huge Western fan, so anytime you have like old-fashioned six-shooter gunplay like that, that's pretty awesome.
Dude, I've never seen six-shooter gunplay like that. The way he was like pulling his gun down and catching bullets midair, stuff like that, it was insane.
It was pretty cool. I mean, think he's it's like when we went and saw Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. You've never seen someone wield an axe like that before. Never seen someone wield a pair of six guns like that. You're right. You're absolutely right.
I really hope that this is a lot better than Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, though.
Oh, God. I can't imagine it is. But I love the part in the movie where, in the trailer where the kid's like, you have to come to my world to help save everybody and save things. And he's like, do you have guns and bullets in your world? Yeah, you're going to like my world. it looks great. It looks really good.
They also had a teaser with no images from. I mean, we've seen a group shot of, but they just had some of the voice acting for the Inhumans TV series.
Yes.
And that was cool and all, but one of the things that wasn't in the trailer but that was talked about in a couple of articles is what they were doing surrounding Black Bolt, the leader. And it's cool because for those who don't know, Black Bolt, one of the things with him is that his voice can level a city. Like when he speaks, it causes chaos. His voice is very powerful. So he stays silent most of the time. And they wanted to do that justice. So they didn't do anything with like voiceovers or, internal monologue. He's going to be doing things like sign language and body language, that kind of thing, like he does in the comics. And yep. I can really appreciate that. I'm glad that they didn't, try to dumb it down by saying, oh, well, we'll have a narrator like in the Wonder Years. Nope. So that's cool.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I'm looking forward to watching the show and giving it a test drive.
Yep. They had a new preview for It.
Yep, I saw that.
They're really doing their best to hide the clown, aren't they?
They are. I mean, that's supposed to be the big reveal,
But the kids were talking a lot of shit. Quite literally in some places.
I'm looking forward to this movie. I did enjoy the original It. I watched it a couple of times. So I'm curious to see how they're going to update it.
Yeah.
So several months ago, they released a teaser trailer, I guess, for a movie called Dunkirk.
Yes.
And basically, it was just guys on ships, and you can hear like a bomber plane's coming at them or something like that. And they start to kind of duck and cover, and that's pretty much it. Well, they've released a more in-detail trailer this week for it.
Right.
Or last week. It doesn't matter. I watched it. And I kind of already wanted to see the movie begin with based on the story, but it's a really, really good trailer. They actually kind of tell you more what the movie's about, which is essentially all these troops are trapped in this area. They can't get out. They're surrounded by the enemy, the Germans and everything. And it's a naval fleet. And citizens in their private boats start going in and picking up these soldiers to take them out. And I'm not going to say much more than that. Go watch the trailer.
Yep.
And I don't want to ruin the story either. But I'm probably going to take my stepfather and go to the movies and see this. Because there's multiple things in it that Irfan likes. War.
And
guns.
And boats.
And lots of boats, yes. but yeah, it's a really good trailer. And just watch it. I'll link it on the page or something, Facebook.
Nice. They released the final, they say it's final, the final Wonder Woman trailer. It looks badass. The movie already looked badass, but yeah, this looks badass.
I know, but all the early reviews, it's like it's just like everything else.
Yeah.
It does look awesome. I will say that 100%. Yes, it looks great. It's the first DC product that I've kind of been excited about, Batman vs. Superman did not excite me. Man of Steel I thought was great.
The moment we saw the preview for Batman vs. Superman, we were both like, we will never see this movie in theaters ever.
Yeah, no, and we didn't. We stuck to our guns on that, and then we watched it. And I still maintain that it's, And then same thing with Suicide Squad. I watched that trailer, does nothing for me whatsoever. But these Wonder Woman trailers have been really good, but I'm just worried that that's the best we're going to get is the 2 minute, you know, the 2 minute version of the movie, if you will.
Yep.
Cause you know, the early previews and the reports is that it's not very good. So
this one actually finally introduced us to the possibility of a villain. He talks about this and we see this brief look at a woman who it looks like part of her face is covered in a mask. Maybe it was kind of weird, like a reverse Phantom of the Opera where like the bottom part of her face and one side were covered in a mask. But,
yeah,
he called her, what did he call her? Like Madame Poison or something like that. And basically said that if she was left to her own devices, that she'd kill everybody. So there could be a villain.
Yeah.
Which is something that we're missing.
I imagine there's got to be a villain. Yeah, I mean, I imagine there's got to be some sort of bad guy in the movie.
And the only other one, I wouldn't have said this because it just came out today, and, you know, technically that would fall under next week's podcast, but I figured, why the hell, it's just a trailer. They released a new trailer today for Blade Runner 2049.
Yes, like I watched that as well, trailer. And it's way better than that preview trailer.
Yes. Yep.
Yes, this actually makes me want to watch the flick.
Agreed. Yes. Yep. Not that I was like before saying, oh, I don't want to watch it, but there was nothing really drawing me in that teaser, other than the fact that it was a Blade Runner sequel. It was by the same guy under the tutelage of the same guy, and that it had Harrison Ford coming back.
Right. Yeah.
Because I mean, despite what you may have heard, I am not a diehard Ryan Gosling fan. I don't get all giddy. My pants don't get wet when I see him.
I hope not. Jeez. Anyhow, I think that's it for me. I'm good. I've covered all my bases, I believe.
I believe that I have also covered all my bases.
Fantastic.
I'm very happy to have been able to get it off my chest how much I hated this week's Fargo. So...
Good. It's good to vent. It's good to have land. So anyways, I guess that's about it. So thanks for listening. Please don't hesitate to reach out, as we always say. And you can find me on the Twitter. I'm at SuperstarML.
I'm at the Quantum Geek, G33K.
The show is at What Did You Watch? And the Facebook is What Did You Watch This Week? And thanks.
Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.